May it please the court, Mr. Bryant. The facts in this case are not in dispute. Respondent was retained by Renetta Johnson to represent her husband, William Williams, on May 27, 2015. Mr. Williams was incarcerated in the St. Louis County Justice Center on a probation violation arising from child support arrearages. Mr. Williams' bond was set at $6,000 cash only that had to be paid to the Family Support Payment Center in the state of Missouri in order to gain his release. Ms. Johnson travels from Austin, Texas to St. Louis for the purpose of getting Mr. Williams out of jail. She's told that the only acceptable form of payment is via cashier's check or money order, neither of which she has. In the end, Ms. Johnson withdraws $6,000 cash from her credit card and delivers that cash to the respondent on June 9, 2015, with the intent that that payment be made by respondent to the Family Support Payment Center in order to obtain his release from jail. Respondent fails to deposit that money into the trust account. Instead, he puts the money into a file cabinet in his law office. A check is then written to the Family Service Payment Center, which bounced. As required by 4-1.15, the bank sent the OCDC an overdraft notice on June 23, 2015. During the course of the subsequent investigation of the overdraft by the OCDC, respondent disclosed to the fraud examiner, Kelly Dillon, from the OCDC, that he had checked himself into a residential drug and alcohol treatment center from June 15 through July 5 because he was drinking alcohol to excess. He also stated to Ms. Dillon that he had placed the money into his file cabinet, but then falsely stated to her that upon his release from the treatment center on July 5, 2015, he was picked up by his brother, Dr. Joshua Hill, who I believe is a dentist, and they went and took that $6,000 in cash from the cabinet at his law office and made the required payment to the Family Service Payment Center. Ms. Dillon conducts an investigation and determines that aside from an alcohol dependence and drug addiction that respondent suffers from, in fact, $2,500 of this $6,000 in cash has been misappropriated by the respondent in order to buy alcohol and or drugs. That when he is picked up from the treatment center by his brother, Dr. Hill, there's only $3,500 in cash remaining from the original $6,000 given to him by Ms. Johnson. He's misappropriated the $2,500. Respondent's brother, Dr. Hill, contributes $2,525 to make up the $6,000 and purchases a cashier's check in the amount of $6,025 in order to pay the necessary amount to the Family Support Payment Center on behalf of the client. The $25 is because of the bounced check that was made to the FSPC. I may have had those initials wrong. The disciplinary hearing panel found violations of 4-1.15 on the part of respondent by failing to hold property separate from his own property, 4-8.4C by misappropriating client funds and by engaging in conduct involving dishonesty and fraud, and 8.1C by knowingly making a false statement to the OCDC. The DHP found that respondent acted intentionally and that he caused significant harm to his client who had to remain in jail for an additional period of time. The panel recommended that respondent be disbarred. Informant concurred in that recommendation. Respondent rejected it. Respondent has no disciplinary history. He, however, does have a prior overdraft of his trust account for which he was cautioned and recommended that he attend a CLE on trust account procedures. He failed to attend that CLE. The sanction in the case, again, is applicable. Sanction is ABA standard 4.11, misappropriating funds. This court's decisions in Kazanis, Ferris, and Mendel have found that acts by lawyers misappropriating client funds so impugn the integrity of the legal system that disbarment is the only appropriate means to restore the public's confidence.
Do you have a protocol for referring to the prosecutor?
There have been cases where we have done that, Judge Titleman. That was not done here. It was not referred to the local prosecutor because, in fact, the money ultimately was made up by respondent's brother and paid to the appropriate party, third party, to gain Mr. Williams' release. Respondent argues in his brief that he should receive Bell's treatment, basically be suspended rather than disbarred, based on the fact that he is suffering from a mental disorder, alcoholism, and drug addiction, and that that should be treated as a significant mitigator that mitigates the sanction from disbarment to suspension. Our view is the required elements that would allow the court to treat the mental disorder as a mitigator are simply not present in the case. There's a lack of record evidence to support a finding that the respondent has recovered from the mental disorder, as would be indicated by a meaningful and sustained period of successful functioning. That is a requirement contained in Rule 5.285 F1 and the ABA standard 9.32 I3. The fact is at the disciplinary hearing panel hearing in the matter, a respondent testified that he still occasionally has a glass of alcohol, stating that this is he does that because this is a hard business, this is a hard life. Respondent further testified that his Narcotics Anonymous sponsor is unaware that he has an occasional drink and would not like it if he knew. Basically, our position is that there's still issues here and that mitigation that was given in the Bell's case is not applicable for that reason.
Procedure. As I recall the Bell's case, that was an early case, and as your predecessor did not hire a medical professional, but you do have medical professionals to assess people at this point.
Well, what happened in that case, judges, we didn't have an expert. They used a treating physician. It was bipolar disorder. He made a causal connection. It was established in the record that there was this causal connection between the misappropriation and bipolar, and the court issues Bell's. After Bell's case comes out, 5.285 gets adopted, basically setting some standards for the use of mental disorder, mental disabilities as mitigating circumstances, which brings me to the point that this was never pled as an affirmative defense in the answer as required by 5.285B. There is no independent medical evidence establishing a causal nexus between the misconduct and the disorder. In addition, a very significant mitigator, additional mitigator in the Bell's case was that he self-reported the conduct. In this case, not only did he not self-report, but in fact lied to the OCDC's fraud investigator.
Since we're talking about protection of the public here, we're talking about one instance, one case, not one case should go. Any indication that this has occurred before with other clients, or there's a pattern of this as a result of the alcoholism?
None that we uncovered, Judge Draper, none. It was this instance. It got reported to us as a result of an overdraft notification from the bank, and
to the public then?
To me, the protection
if the
here.
Brother, let's say he should have paid it, not the brother, but the brother paid it. It's paid, okay? So what now is the protection of the public to go forward?
I think it's a fair issue, Judge. Sure, I think it's a fair issue. I think the protection of the public is that there's a period where I think a respondent needs to step away from the practice of law and get his life in order. It certainly hasn't been indicated.
That's suspension.
Well, I think the conduct calls for disbarment, whether you suspend or disbar. Our view is that the ABA standards in this court's decisions support disbarment. In either event, he needs to be away from the practice of law for a period until he gets his life back in order. Because frankly, I think he'd be a different person. And I, while there was never any medical evidence establishing a causal nexus, I tried the case back in February. I think there is some causal nexus here, from my own personal observations. And I think the panel kind of felt that way. Nevertheless, there was no medical evidence required by 5.285. But the other requirements aren't there. I just think it's a situation where he needs to be away from the practice until he gets his life.
Our rule does not preclude consider all circumstances, including anything that may be affecting the person, marital status, alcohol, drugs, other things. It's not the formal defense.
Absolutely. No, I've given you a very formalistic answer, but clearly correct, Judge Stith. Other factors come into play. I think it's a case where once he gets his life in order, he could be a completely different person, and this conduct probably never would have happened, frankly. But at the time it happened, and at the time of the hearing as well, I think he was impaired, not impaired at the hearing, but simply still suffering from whatever his mental disability.
In dealing with the public, do we ever require the malefactor to apologize to the victim and get a response from the victim?
Not in my experience. I think there was one case in the very distant past where the court said, if you apologize, we'll do this. If you don't, we're going to do that. But I'm not aware of any requirement like that. He did express remorse for the conduct during the hearing, and I think that, I think it was, honest and heartfelt that he was remorseful for what had happened. I think he probably is today, and he'll express that. But the point is, I think the requirements of the ABA standards and this court's decisions, he did misappropriate $2,500 in this instance, called for some severe sanction. Whether it's a 3-year suspension or disbarment is up to the court, but I think the standards would certainly support the panel's decision of a disbarment. Unless there's other questions, I'll save any other time for rebuttal.
May it please the court.
The facts are not in dispute except for one, and Mr. Williams did not suffer because of the bounce check. The reason the check was written, his wife, Ms. Johnson, came up from Texas, had a $6,000 bond. I told her to go get cash, because the St. Louis County Justice Center only takes cash. They will not take her credit card. She went to get her credit card. In between that time, I had been negotiating with the prosecutor in the case, and we determined, because it was a probation violation, if we handled the payment as a probation child support payment as opposed to a bonding out of jail, he wouldn't have to come back. All he would have to do is remain current on his child support payments. That was the reason for handling the payment that way, for instructing her to try to get. She was first instructed by me to get cash because I thought we were going to bond him out. When we decided we were going to do the payment, I asked her if she could go get a cashier's check, but she has no extra money to pay for a cashier's check. So,
did he remain incarcerated longer than he would have had to be incarcerated?
No.
But for the money not.
Well, if he would have taken the $6,000, put it in your trust account, and wrote a check, as opposed to taking $2,500 out and going into treatment, wouldn't he have been released?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure I understand your
well,
facts here.
Well.
The $2,500 was misappropriated by me.
When was he released?
He was released either June 9th, the day we cut the deal, or June 10th, and that would have been up to Justice Services at St. Louis County.
Before the check bounced.
Before the check bounced, he was out of jail.
Yeah,
he was out
of jail. They released him, then the check bounced.
Correct.
Right.
That is the circumstances, and I came to have $6,000 cash. And erroneously, another lawyer suggested that I take the cash, put it in my trust account, write the check so that we could do the deal the way we had negotiated, so that he wouldn't have to come back from Texas for a bond hearing. He wouldn't be out on bond. He would be continued on probation. So that is why I had the money. And as Mr. Pratzel, the informant, has indicated, I had a... I'm an alcoholic. I have an addiction to drugs. And at the time, it was pretty bad. The end of May, I wrecked my car, so I'm taking Metro to court. I'm taking taxi cabs wherever I need to go. And yeah, in retrospect, taking that money was a dumb idea, using the money the way I did. And I use it on transportation and alcohol and drugs. I use that money inappropriately. And I admitted that in my answer to the formal information on December 1st, I believe it was. But I did lie to Kelly Dillon when she first called and investigated. I thought, erroneously again, that because the money had been paid back, no one needed to know the details. I wish I hadn't done that. My name is now connected to that.
Are you in recovery now?
Judge, I am. I'm not in NA anymore. I seek a counselor. Her name is Lisa Brown. She's in Columbia. I now live in Columbia with my brother. I work for his company during the day, and I wait tables at night. I do drive back to St. Louis to finish up, dispose my cases that I have open, because I can't afford another lawyer to take them over for me until this court or somebody else tells me I cannot continue to operate that way. I'm going to continue to drive to St. Louis and finish these cases.
You're not taking any new cases, you're saying?
Oh, no. I'm a
waiter. How many cases do you think you still have?
I've got 4 felony cases and a lot of traffic stuff that I haven't withdrawn from, but the clients have gone AWOL and don't know where they are and won't return phone calls, etc.
So normally we disbar people if they steal money.
I understand.
Why shouldn't that apply to you?
I did not induce this cash for the purpose of buying my alcohol and drugs. I honestly thought I did a good job for Mr. Williams that day in getting him that deal and structuring it the way that did. That was a good outcome for him. I wish I had not used the money. I wish I had gone straight to the bank with it and deposited it into the trust account. I was licensed to practice law in 2011, December. I really started in 2012 after the holidays. In February 2012, I was asked to move out of my house, the marital house. I've been suffering from depression, and I sought to self-medicate. I have stepped away from the practice of law, and I absolutely need to, because it is a hard business. And I will stand by that statement that I made. I am asking for a suspension so that I can get my life together, so that I can deal with the underlying depression which causes the addictive behavior, the drinking and using drugs. Yeah, I in February had been drinking wine with dinner. I don't even do that anymore. So I don't know what else to say. I will concede the rest of my time for the rebuttal and ask that you find it appropriate to suspend me rather than to disbar me. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Bradford.
Unless there's questions, I have nothing to add.
Do you agree that the defendant was released? His release was not delayed by...
I do agree, Judge Wilson. I think I had frankly forgotten that from the hearing, but I think he did testify to that, and we got no subsequent complaints from Ms. Johnson or anyone else regarding any delay in his release. And so I think it all kind of got triggered by the overdrafts, frankly. Thank you.
Thank you. Cases submitted.